This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.
It's impossible to let go once you've started using. I'll tell you, after even an hour and a half or two, I am chomping at the bit to find my Juul. So my biggest concern is right now I'm puffing happy, worry-free, and then in 20 years, I'll have to explain to my kids why I've developed popcorn lung or some new form of lung cancer because I didn't know what the risks were of e-cigarettes. It terrifies me.
That was a soundbite from a teenager who uses a vape. It was from a story produced by National Public Radio. Vaping gone viral, the astonishing surge in teens' e-cigarette use. That was a headline 2 weeks ago in the online news site Vox. That article noted that 4.9 million high school and middle school students admitted in a survey to having used tobacco or nicotine in the past 30 days. E-cigarettes were the most popular method. So let's talk about teen vaping use and whether it's a problem and whether anything should be done. Joining Cincinnati Edition today are University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and Thoracic Surgeon, Dr. Julian Guitron. Thank you for being here. He's in the studio here, and on the phone is Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky President and CEO Ben Chandler. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And live via Skype is Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association founder and CEO Ray Story. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Dr. Guitron, I want to start with you. We heard that soundbite from a teenager in that NPR story. What are you seeing? You work on a college campus. You teach there. What are you seeing in terms of young people using these devices? Is it a frequent sight?
Thanks for having me. Yes, it is concerning because if you look at surveys, the impression that the young population have about e-cigarettes is that it's a benign thing. It's just ubiquitous. It's no problem at all. It's a great alternative. It's cool, and you're free to go. And that's concerning.
Do you have comments, questions, or input on this situation? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be looking for your comments and your tweets, and we may get some into the show. So as a doctor, Dr. Guitron, what is your message to these folks who are picking up vaping, seeing it as an alternative to cigarettes?
Well, I am one not to demonize one thing or another just out of a few negative notes. E-cigarettes have helped people quit smoking. And for the past several decades, this campaign of really fighting against the tobacco combustion regular cigarettes has really worked to the point where now we're at historical low levels. E-cigarettes have been shown to help people quit smoking. So that is very important to recognize. And as long as it is limited to that, I'm all in favor for it. However, we have many other uses right now. And of course, the theme today is youth pickup of e-cigarettes, where there's a lot of unknowns. This is a new technology. It's a new kid in the block, so to speak, where there are byproducts, combustion byproducts of even vaping that are carcinogens, and we don't know the long-term effect. The young guy that you just presented, he's very wise in having the foresight of not knowing what the oils will result in after a long-term use of this e-cigarette. Popcorn lung, for example? Yes, absolutely. So what will he be able to tell his family down the road if he does end up with crippling emphysema, fibrosis, or any of the other lung diseases that can come from it?
Ben, Kentucky is known for its high smoking rate. It's the highest or among the highest in the country, depending on the data. What's your position on the growth of e-cigarettes among younger users?
Well, we're considerably concerned about it. And, of course, the thing that's so alarming is the explosion just within the last year of use amongst young people. And I agree with the doctor when he said that it does have some efficacy for people who are attempting to quit smoking, for adults who are attempting to quit smoking. What we're really worried about, though, is this explosion amongst people who have never smoked before, young people. There isn't any doubt that it's a potential gateway to using more harmful tobacco products. And what we're doing is we're addicting an entire new generation of people to nicotine. Nicotine is bad for the development of the brain, and the rate at which young people are taking up these products, 78% increase last year alone amongst high school students. It is alarming to see that kind of increase overnight, essentially. And frankly, a lot of it has to do with the popularity of this new sleek product called Juul, and a lot of it has to do, we believe, with the flavorings that are used, which we don't think are necessary.
And we're going to dive into the Juul situation and some of the flavors as well. First, let's talk to Ray Story. He is the founder and CEO of Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association. Ray, you're hearing this feedback from our other two guests. Are you concerned that younger users are picking up those products?
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. The issue is that it has really been brought to everybody's attention, basically because of the success of one particular company. The issue that I have with that, when I sued the FDA back in 2008 to make e-cigarettes a legal tobacco product, was to actually provide the current tobacco user with an alternative to the deadliest product on the planet. I duplicated that process in Europe because I felt I was really passionate about trying to stop the mortality rate that seems to be unnecessary from this horrible product. But we have strict guidelines, and when a company manufactures a product specifically designed to deceive the public that it looks like a USB stick, and when they then put an amount of nicotine in these products that is three times that of a pack of cigarettes, and somehow only provide the flavors with the highest amount of nicotine, but yet tobacco and menthol in numerous different strength levels, then you find that that particular company, although extremely successful, and I certainly applaud them for that, at the end of the day, they have done something that created a major issue for the category as a whole.
Okay, so it sounds like there's some conflict within the industry itself. So if you're representing this organization that you founded advocating on behalf of e-cigarettes and vaping, but you've got now this household brand, Juul, that has dominated the conversation, when did you realize that this might be a problem for you and your efforts?
Well, we realized that quite some time ago. I mean, on the TVCA, we promoted a max nicotine content of 3.5%. And so with now products coming out on the market that are 4.5 and 5%, I mean, it's not necessary. The reason that is happening is because they've taken these very small, ineffective, inefficient hardware pieces, and they basically add so much nicotine to it that you could have put the nicotine on a mop and wiped the floor with it and would have gotten the same efficacy, because the nicotine content is so strong, but it has to be that strong because the actual product, the hardware, is ineffective and doesn't work very well unless it is has a, you know, a serious amount of nicotine in it. So we have to do more things within the industry to bring up technology, as one of the individuals that spoke earlier about popcorn lung. We've done a lot of things to eliminate those type of ingredients. So our goal is to obviously provide the adult with an alternative to conventional tobacco. Nicotine has never been the problem. Certainly for young people it is, but it is addictive, no question. But nicotine and caffeine are virtually identical. So we're trying to provide a product to the adult to allow them to use a product that is vastly less harmful than conventional tobacco. And by promoting this product, we hope to eliminate conventional tobacco off the face of the earth.
Okay, well, let's talk a little more about the design of the devices. It was brought up here sort of by Ray and the Juul. These e-cigarettes don't often resemble cigarettes. They look like small electronic devices. And Juul, this leading brand, is created by two former smokers, one of whom was a design engineer at Apple. So these are guys who know a thing or two about design and how to appeal to the youth market. So the company sought to make a device that looks sleek and attractive, according to Vox, to look like a USB port. It's the look of the device, and I want to throw this to Ben Chandler. Is the look of these devices also a problem in your organization's view?
I don't think there's any question about it. The look of them, the size of them, the fact that they can be hidden in the palm of your hand. Young people are using these devices during class. That's how easy they are to conceal. And they are very, very sleek, as you said before, attractive, cool, and they can be personalized very easily. They look just like a USB stick, and it's parents don't even know what they are. Teachers don't know what they are. all of this is a great concern. And again, I think it's important to put a fine point on this. We're concerned about nicotine addiction for young people. That's what we're concerned about. And I think that we actually have some considerable agreement on that point with the industry. And I'm hearing Ray say that, too, and I'm glad to hear that. But nevertheless, whether it's intended or unintended, the consequence is real, and we're seeing a whole new generation of young people being addicted.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today we talk vaping and the growing number of teenagers turning to the cigarette alternative. We're joined in the studio by University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and Thoracic Surgeon Dr. Julian Guitron. On the phone is Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky President and CEO Ben Chandler. And via Skype, we have Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association founder and CEO Ray Story. Doctor, what are you finding in terms of the natural makeup or the mechanical makeup or the artificial makeup of the stuff they're putting in these devices? Are there any warnings for us about consuming them?
No warning. There's no real regulation by the FDA, although that seems to be changing slowly over time due to public pressure. But there's no real warning. It's almost like supplements, vitamins. You know, you really don't have a real label where you get the concerns or the ingredients. And so while the vapor sounds very harmless, the oil in which it's mixed, it can be natural or it can be synthetic. The synthetic one we now know has a number of carcinogens. We don't know the effect long-term over the lung, which you're basically smoking formaldehyde and chemicals like that. And then the nicotine. The nicotine seems to be a little bit less aggressive in its pure form towards the lung, but it has a profound cardiovascular effect. So now we're seeing the potential for strokes, heart attacks, or peripheral vascular disease on the rise, especially if you start that young. You do that over a few decades. It doesn't sound good at all.
If you want to weigh in on this conversation, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk about some of these flavors. And I want to go back to Ray. I think you touched on some of these flavors that the company Juul is putting out. What is your position on flavors in general? Are you more of just supportive of the tobacco or menthol options, or do you have positions on the other fruity ones?
Well, let me first say that, you know, we're much more in line than we are opposing the issue here, certainly as Ben just stated. Look, as far as flavors are concerned, nobody needs SpongeBob SquarePants strawberry. I mean, nobody needs that. You know, but at the end of the day, I think that flavors obviously have to be a part of the product because nicotine is odorless and flavorless. So if we ban flavors, it would be a de facto ban on the entire category. To address the doctor's issue, look, there are the technology currently is not up to par. So when he's talking about the tests that have been done where they have found certain carcinogens or nitrosamines within the product, it's usually because the actual hardware is simply inefficient, ineffective, and not working as it should. And we need to do more to create the next generation technology. As far as flavors overall, look, the government has a role to play here. As much as I know that the FDA is doing now, I know Mitch and Dr. Gottlieb are doing a lot of work to try to curb this issue that we see. But we started back in 2008 at the TVCA to demand face-to-face and online age verification so that we could stop this. But because of the slow process, and it had nothing to do with public pressure, it had to do with the fact that, you know, the category was growing and we needed regulation. We pushed for regulation because only with regulation can you control an environment and make the products be what they're supposed to be and create standards. And that is a process that's been extremely slow. In Europe, we did that in less than 2 years. The warning labels are on there. We have a nicotine level that is far below the US level. And so we've created that there already. Here, however, the process is much slower, and that is the reason why we now see this epidemic, because somehow, some way, in my lawsuit, I made sure it was a tobacco product, but yet these companies are advertising on television every day every hour of the week. So that to me is concerning.
This seems somewhat similar to that crackdown on certain mascots who were used to push cigarettes some years ago. Ben, do you think there should be a limit or limits on what types of flavors are available for vaping?
Well, let me just say this. There is no argument that I know of to suggest that cotton candy and bubblegum flavors are aimed at anybody other than young people. There are certain flavors that we just simply don't have to have. I understand Ray saying that there needs to be some flavoring in the product. I understand that. But to have flavors that are aimed specifically at young people, I'd like to hear somebody's excuse for that.
So, Ben, your organization is working on an excise tax for e-cigarettes. Is that correct?
We are. There are a number, 9 or 10 states have excise taxes at various rates. They're not terribly easy to collect, but we're working on that in Kentucky in this legislative session. I don't know whether we'll get it done or not, but we will continue to work on that. And we just very simply like to see these products taxed at a level that is similar to tobacco taxes, and that also discourages young people, because we know that young people are price sensitive. Again, we're talking about young people here. That's where our concern is. And these taxes will affect them.
So we know that the General Assembly in Kentucky just last year raised the excise tax on cigarettes after a long battle. So that was a success for health advocates. I know you mentioned that you don't know what's going to happen in the waning days here of this current legislative session in Frankfurt. But what would you say the chances are?
Well, I don't think the chances, frankly, are very good in this session. It's a short session, and it's not a budget session. So you usually don't get revenue measures through a session like this. In the previous session, we did get the highest increase in the cigarette tax in the history of the state, but it was still only 50 cents, which wasn't nearly enough. And at the last minute, very secretly, the tax on e-cigarettes was removed.
And Ray, we're talking about vaping in the context of teens' use, but it is also often presented as an alternative to regular or traditional smoking. So there was a study from the Queen Mary University of London that found that e-cigs were more effective than nicotine patches and other smoking cessation options for people looking to quit cigarettes. Is that the same kind of data your industry is finding?
Yeah, that's correct, Michael. But let me address one thing, because there's a point of disagreement here with Ben as far as the taxes are concerned. Look, I think I actually promoted taxes in my process in Europe. However, taxes are based on history of harm. So I want everybody to understand that if you make a product that has already put a significant dent in the conventional tobacco cigarette sales, and now even has the big four tobacco giants stating that they want to get rid of conventional tobacco altogether, then let's not try to make this product where it's identical to conventional tobacco. Let's at least give them the ability to make that switch, that and a conscious choice that they're making to shift and switch to a less harmful alternative.
Ben, you heard that. What's your response to that, Ben?
Well, we can probably live with something like that, but we do need these products to be taxed. And again, what about the young people? They are price sensitive. We do have a problem with young people, and we need to not addict them like we are. They're being addicted at an explosive rate. Something's got to be done about that. In fact, we've got to focus on that.
And Ray, as to the efficacy of vaping as a smoking cessation device, give us some input on that.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, when you're dealing with a product like that, you have to increase the dosage for it becoming a drug delivery device or a cessation device. And me personally, I believe that this product could lend itself in that category. But just like with that product, if you were to increase the dosage without the proper regulation, then you would have kids actually buying those products. But that is going to be a lot more difficult due to the fact that those products are going to be prescribed by the doctors and potentially the doctor that's on this show. The issue is we need to make sure we regulate it and enforce it. We need to make sure, as I agree with Ben, that children need to stop buying this product. If you're an adult, you're free to do what you want. the proper age verification for face-to-face and online needs to be implemented and enforced. You can't make a rule without the enforcement. As far as cessation device, yes, when I sued to change this product into a tobacco product because nicotine is derived from stem and leaf of a tobacco plant, it was actually at that point in time a medicinal product and a drug delivery device. I don't think that nicotine is a drug as it's defined under the U.S. law, what a drug should be. But I do believe that it has great potential to potentially wean people off the conventional tobacco cigarettes by providing specific dosage with the right hardware in place, and meaning the right hardware, a product that doesn't create other issues with exception of trying to get somebody to get off of conventional tobacco. And so I'm all for it.
Dr. Gautron, is nicotine a drug in your view?
It is. It is. It has all the effects. Some definitions may not include it as such, but when you see the effects that nicotine and overdoses and long-term effect results as, it's no different than any other medication that we use.
So I want to give some stats. The New York Times produced back in December the use of tobacco cigarettes is still at an historic low right now. Only 3.6% of high school seniors report that they smoke daily. It was 22% just 20 years ago. That's a dramatic drop in a pretty short period of time. But teens are also moving away from alcohol and opioids, according to that same report in the New York Times. The rate of marijuana use among high school seniors, 5.8% for daily users. That stayed about the same for the past 20 years, the Times reported. However, the vaping is what's increasing so dramatically. So in our final minute here, I want to hear from Ben and from Ray what you think is what is drawing teens to this industry. And we'll start with Ben.
Well, I think that it's obvious that this new product, this Juul, is cool. Kids like it. It's they can hide it very easily. And again, it is powerfully addictive. Nicotine, whatever anybody might say about nicotine, there's one piece of agreement, and that is that it's one of the most tremendously addictive products on earth. And it's harmful to the developing brain. But it's attractive to kids, no doubt about it.
All right, Ray, and your final thoughts on what you think explicitly is drawing younger users into vaping.
Look, I agree that nicotine is addictive, but let's be realistic about it. The second highest concentration of nicotine is found in tomato plants, and we're not banning those. So with that said, nicotine is clearly not a drug. It is defined as a stimulant, not a drug. A drug is supposed to cure, stop, or alter the course of disease. Juul has done a phenomenal job to increase the nicotine level to such a level that, yes, by the time you use it, it creates that buzz, that high that they're looking for. The problem is how that product was designed and target marketed to these young individuals. And that's the issue. Look, during the entire process of the e-cigarette category, not one company ever got rated by the FDA. They were the only ones. So obviously somewhere, somehow, they've done things that are inconsistent with how you market this product. And if we do things in a manner that are consistent by good regulation and build that and then enforce it as well,
all right,
then you're going to have a product that can help everybody.
Thank you for that, Ray. I hope this show doesn't prompt anyone to start smoking tomatoes, though. I want to thank Dr. Julian Gautron, Ben
pleasure.
Chandler, and Ray Story for joining us. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our show can be found online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.